one of the best things you can do if you're single is get free of porn now. Don't bring it into your relationship because it's only going to create more problems. And if you're in a relationship, a mistake made once is a mistake. A mistake made twice is a choice. And it's very important that we do not, I know very few people who were able to actually get fully free on their own. The opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is...
Based on today's title, you may already know that this topic is out of the ordinary. In fact, you may even think that it is taboo. And that's the reason why you should listen. We talk about pornography, the very topic that is preventing young adults, most probably someone that you know, to strive for their dreams or even just learn the fact of creating and building meaningful relationships in their lives. It is wiring your brain to perceive reality in a completely unrealistic way. And in times of stress or unhappiness, a lot of people take refuge in watching porn, making it an addictive behavior. Today's guest is Sathya Sam. It took him 15 years to get rid of his porn addiction, and now he's an expert coach and international speaker that helps men overcome pornography addiction. He has made his biggest obstacle his life's mission. So without further ado, my name is Kevin Fernandez. Welcome to Muse. I'm really curious on your side, how did you get into... What was the first exposure towards pornography on your side?
Yeah, that's a great question. And really a much more important question than people realize. I grew up in a really good home. You know, my parents loved each other. They're both educated. My dad was a pastor, so faith was a huge part of our life. And my parents paid money for us to have a private education. So, you know, everything was set up for myself to make really good decisions in life, to go on and do great things. And in the computer lab of my Christian school at the age of 11 is where I got exposed to pornography. And it happened completely by accident, by innocence, really. But nonetheless, that was sort of the seed that was planted. I don't think I had even hit puberty yet, to be honest. So it wasn't like instant arousal. I was very confused by what I had seen. But, you know, anybody who's had any sort of struggle with porn knows that first time is... rarely the last. And so for me, later on, you know, when I started to enter my teenage years, that's when I start to become more curious. And of course, I had this thing in the back of my head. What was that? I remembered the URL enough. And it wasn't like an instant addiction. It was very gradual. But with time, I started to become more dependent on it. So that's sort of how everything got started for me.
How did you get into the URL? Do you remember specifically what it was? Because I remember my first time. And it was something like completely random as a teenager, just simply I was playing games and you see like the website full of thumbnails with games. And then at some point there is one game you don't think about. For me, it was Dragon Ball. And then it completely got into something completely different. So how was your like first experience?
Yeah. So my classmate came up to me. He played like really competitive soccer. And he was like, hey, my buddy told me to check out this website, type it in. And it was whitehouse.com. So like, again, just very inauspicious. I put it in. And then before I know it, like I remember, you know, back in those days, the computer monitors had these big circular power buttons on the front. So as soon as I saw it, I remember like trying to jam the power button. It was a public space, you know, and like. And that's all I knew was just to hide, which in many ways speaks to people's experience with pornography. You know, the primary message and the primary response is to hide. I know we'll get into all of that. But anyway, that was the website. Yeah. It was whitehouse.com.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. Like everyone has a different story, but I definitely have like some memories in my head when I was younger or in high school that like a lot of people came up to me and with some sort of like just the same story as you just said, like, oh, check out this link. You should watch that. And that's like the first experience you have. So, yeah. But what was it that at some, like, when was it over the course of the years that you said, okay, I am addicted? You considered yourself as addicted. And on the other side also, what is it? Like, how would you define the fact of being addicted to porn?
For me, it was a gradual progression. I think in high school, I was engaging in porn on some kind of semi-regular basis. My buddies all watched it as well. So I, in the back of my head, I knew like it wasn't probably the right thing to do. I didn't want to do it. But because I had the social affirmation and I kind of always told myself like I can stop this whenever I want, I just continued on. But what happened is I went straight into university out of college and my out of high mm-hmm. school rather. And my goal was to become a psychiatrist. So I was working really hard to get good grades. In Canada, you know, the system's very competitive and you have to complete an undergrad degree with really outstanding grades and a lot of volunteering and that kind of thing. So I was, you know, working hard. I worked in research labs. I was volunteering mm-hmm. In mental health centers. I had a part-time job to help pay for my education. Like I was very busy and porn was my medication to cope with the stress and the anxiety that came pursuing an education. And it was also my reward, you know, to kind of take the edge off after a long day. And that was where the addiction really developed. And I didn't realize how bad it was until I had, again, another story for another day, but I really found Jesus in my undergrad. And, okay. And when I committed my life to him, I was like, okay, I knew I had to clean up some parts of my life. Again, I had grown up Christian, so I sort of knew the territory. But, you know, when you're a pastor's kid and stuff, you do a lot of things because you're expected to, not necessarily because you choose to. And in university mm-hmm. was where that transition happened, where it was like, I'm not just doing this because I have to. Nobody's holding a gun to my head anymore. Not that my parents were really like that, but you know what I mean. And it was like, okay, I want to do this. Like, I want to give my life to Jesus. So anyway, made that decision, cleaned up a bunch of my lifestyle. And one of those things was porn. And that was when I realized just how problemed I was because I could not get rid of it for the life of me. I entered a vicious cycle known as the binge purge cycle, where you engage in the substance or the behavior. You feel terrible afterwards. Mm-hmm. You get rid of all the history of it. So you clear your browser history. In my case, you know, you pray and you repent and you ask for God's forgiveness. And you maybe go a couple days, maybe a couple weeks, only to find yourself binging again and kind of just continuing in this. And that was basically what my life looked like. And that's when I knew I was really problemed. You asked another great question there, and I don't want it to go missed. The mm-hmm. definition of addiction in this context is really challenging. It's funny, you know, historically, addiction has always been referred to with substances, so drugs and alcohol primarily. With time, they finally acknowledged that gambling, a behavior, could actually be an addiction as well. They did extensive research mm-hmm. and they saw that the brain's response patterns to gambling were very similar to that of alcohol or drugs. Essentially, the response that they see neurologically is that the brain is, it's not that they're addicted to winning. That's what you would think, right? Mm-hmm. What they're actually addicted to is what's next. So that is sort of what defines the addiction. And even with alcoholism and drug abuse, it's very similar. The brain becomes very addicted to novelty, to what's next. And that's why when you start gambling or you start doing drugs, you start off very small. But the things that you're experiencing, eventually they don't start to stimulate you the way they originally did. But it's that addiction to what's next that drives you to engage in something more intense, more risky, or whatever it might be. Now, we're observing similar patterns for people who watch porn over longer periods of time. The problem is, number one, it's hard to get data about it because porn is very privatized and it's very secluded. Mm. And number two, the research is just limited. But the DSM, which is the primary manual that psychiatrists use for diagnosing clinical conditions like a gambling addiction, they even acknowledge video game addiction now, another behavioral kind of addiction, but they have not yet acknowledged porn as an addiction. There's some conspiracy theories around that because pornography is a very, very lucrative industry and who knows what those guys are paying people off and whatever. I'm not really of that opinion myself. I just think the research is limited and it's probably a matter of time. But all this to say is the indicators are all there. We just need a little bit more research, I think, before it's a diagnosable condition in a psychiatric kind of environment. But as far as mm-hmm. I'm concerned and as far as what I witness in my clients, The addiction is real, and people all across the globe are experiencing it on a very regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, like, I appreciate that, because the thing is, like, an addiction, it's the fact of, like, not being able to stop and, like, taking refuge in something when you, like, at least for my definition, is like taking refuge in that activity when you could do something else, but you're still taking refuge on that specific activity in order to get the refuge.
Yes.
And like, as you said before, like, it also gives you this reward, and that's the reward that keeps you doing it over and over and over again over the course of the years and months and whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And what they're finding is they always look for a few specific characteristics to kind of define an addiction. So one is they look for the development of intolerance, which is very hard mm-hmm. to measure with pornography. Like drug abuse, you can kind of see the progression of like people starting with lighter drugs and then taking it more often, or they start to do harder drugs. Harder to quantify that with pornography, although, you know, we're getting some mm-hmm. metrics for that. But they also find it's like they start to neglect their social commitments. So they tell their friends, hey, I'm busy tonight, can't come out, when really they're just watching porn. And it does start to affect, like you said, the reward systems, a really important one. So they start to lose motivation. And then another really important one is people start to take greater risks. And so you can tell, like, when people are not showing up to their exams, or they're not showing up to work, or they're late for work because they're watching porn or whatever, that's when it starts to be considered riskier behavior. So again, all the signs are there. It'll just take a little bit of time before we can finally diagnose as an addiction clinically.
No, it will definitely come. We've talked about rewards. I find it a little bit like contradictory, because especially, at least that's my feeling, but you will tell me with your clients and your personal experience, it doesn't feel a reward once the job is done.
Uh-huh. Yes, very well said.
It feels like, yeah. It feels like, no, I want to get rid of it. At least that's from what I have heard from countless stories as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the weird thing about pornography. Like, I mean, you and I are both guys, and we know even amongst men, there's these weird pressures to kind of, you know, engage in the guy talk and talk about girls a certain way. And porn has become sort of enveloped in that conversation where it's sort of normalized. And, you know, we talk about all this, like I'm hearing stories about guys who are like exchanging videos with each other. Like, oh, you got to check this out, check that out. I never really had that experience myself, but it's become so normalized in our culture. But I like to equate it to McDonald's. You know, McDonald's okay. is very convenient, very affordable food. And when you're hungry, if you do need something that's cheap and convenient, McDonald's is actually a great option. The problem is, once you've eaten McDonald's, it's only a matter of time before you're hungry again. Like, usually it's like probably 20, 30 minutes. Because while it initially met that need, it didn't actually satisfy it. It just gave you some sort of temporary relief. And porn mm-hmm. is fast food intimacy. See, porn offers the exact same thing. It's convenient, it's affordable, and yet afterwards, it leaves you feeling worse than when you started, and you've basically made no progress in getting your needs met. So yes, you're exactly right with the way you said it. Porn presents itself as a reward, but it actually leaves you emptier after the fact.
I love that analogy with McDonald's. I mean, myself, I'm a vegan, so I wouldn't really go with that way. But
not as relatable.
Yeah, I love the analogy. So how does porn wire myself as a person? What are the characteristics that porn gives me and wires my brain to be as a human being? And how does it then also involve the people around me?
Okay, that's an excellent question. So let's talk about how it affects the individual first. Porn mm-hmm. is regularly wiring your brain for dopamine secretion. Now, okay. dopamine secretion, the problem is that we want more of it. It's the same reason that you keep scrolling on Instagram, because you want more and you want more. And it's actually that same concept. You scroll through a feed because you want to see what's next. You want to see what's new, which is, like I said, the essence of addiction. So porn starts to rewire your brain, and it makes you crave it. It makes you want it more and more, the same way you have sugar cravings and everything else. But of course, porn is on another level, because it is playing into our sexual arousal state, which is a very primitive part of the brain. We're wired to reproduce. And so mm-hmm. those parts of us, when they sort of get fused with the reward systems of the brain, it becomes very hard to actually separate those. And that's what keeps people coming back for more and more and more, and eventually watching more intense content if things get really out of control. Mm-hmm. The greater effect, though, is really seen on a relational level. So that intense dopamine secretion, it actually starts to reduce people's motivation. It's kind of ironic because Ooh. You would think an excitatory neurotransmitter like dopamine, having more of that would make you more energized and more creative. But your brain and your whole body is wired for homeostasis, to have this kind of ebb and flow and this balance. Mm-hmm. And if you get too much dopamine secretion, your brain actually goes into a very low state. So you will find, and this is synonymous really across the board of all addiction, people that really engage in the behavior, they eventually start to become depressed or at least unmotivated. So that starts to affect people's work. It starts to affect their involvement in relationships. And let me just give you a couple really interesting stats specifically about men. Now, women are struggling as well, but the nature of my practice is with men. So I do apologize for the ladies who are listening. I'll have to get some stats for you as well. But to give you an idea of how this affects people's, even their perceptions around around sexuality and relationships and all that, the rate of erectile dysfunction among men under the age of 40 is 1 in 3. Damn. 1 in 3. Now, 20 years ago, Kevin, the rate was only 5%. It's now 33.33%, just over the last 15 years. So there's only one thing that has actually, that we can kind of correlate with this spike. And it is actually the development of smartphones, which of course has led to the widespread of pornography and pornographic content. So it is having a major role physiologically, because of course, when you are used to being stimulated by a perfectly produced porn video, then when you experience, intimacy with a real person, that of course is incredible, but it doesn't quite add up to your experience on screen. There's a disconnect, and guys are not able to experience arousal as a result. So that's becoming very prevalent. Those rates are only going to go up. So that's kind of the scary thing. Now, another thing, I just read a book, and this is from one of the world's leading urologists. And he talked about how in his office, a lot of guys come in for male enhancement operations, procedures, supplements, whatever they can get their hands on. Mm-hmm. Because of course, what they're seeing on the screen is very different to their own reality. What he says is that 80% of people that come in to ask for the surgery decline the surgery once they realize what the average size is for a man. 80%. So it goes to show you that porn is having an obvious effect neurologically, the way it's rewiring our brain and everything else, but it's also having an effect mentally, just in our constructs around relationships, sexual intimacy, and our very manhood. And so it's a great question you asked. I think we could keep going, but hopefully that gives you a bit of a snapshot of just the impact that porn does have on the brain.
I love it, especially the fact that it can influence our mindset in a completely different set. Like, it's, I always like to relate to social media, right? We are exposed to so much because social media has become something very, very common in our day-to-day lives. And we are seeing all these things, and we are expecting to be the same person or like something relatable to what we have in our feed. So essentially we become our feed, or we wish to become our feed, which doesn't, like, especially in a life where Instagram is all about just showing your best side and forgetting about your worst side, relating to pornography again, like, you just wish to be or do the things that you see, even though it doesn't have anything to do, like, it doesn't even say anything about like how to maintain a relationship. It doesn't even say that that means that is meant to be good in the bedroom. And I love that. Like, I hate the fact that it's screwing us, but I love the fact that you're talking about it.
I mean, yeah.
You've said that it completely wires our brain, and we are essentially expecting something, or we're expected to be that person. How would one get rid of, like, or at least maintain their expectations? How does one, like, is, first of all, another question, is there a space where porn can be safe? So where it doesn't affect us the way we have just described it.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think if we went back to the fast food analogy, you're asking kind of the same thing. It's like, is there a place where a little bit of McDonald's is okay for you? The answer is no. Now, could you get away with a little bit of McDonald's here and there? Absolutely. But what we find is, so like a lot of guys who come to me, they come to me because porn was sort of this thing in their life. It wasn't a big deal. And then something happened. Like their heart got broken. They went through a major life transition. They went through some difficulty in life. And then that thing that was always just kind of there a little bit here and there suddenly became an overwhelming problem that they couldn't contain. So I think it's playing with fire to even have it a little bit in your life. Okay. For me, coming from a faith standpoint, you know, my stance is to not have any of it. And that has a more of a spiritual and a moral component. But even if you take that apart, when like you're just assessing, like, is this good for me? The answer is no. There's nothing to indicate it's good for you. Some couples justify it. They say it improves their sex life. But the research is very clear that most couples where pornography is involved, either just one spouse is watching or they're watching it together, the overall rates of satisfaction in the relationship are lower. So even that is a little bit of a misnomer. It doesn't actually really improve your sex life. What actually improves your sex life is having a healthy relationship, having meaningful intimacy and meaningful connection between the two people. Historically speaking, there has never been a case where a third party in a relationship adds to the satisfaction with it. So I don't think there's really any situation where it's safe or it's healthy. Like I said, I think if you want to be really technical, you could probably get away with small doses here and there, but it's really not good practice and usually ends up being the gateway to much worse things down the road.
Cool. Love it. How does one... So now the question remains, if one is now exposed to pornography, and I'm always thinking about the fact like the younger generations that are just being exposed to it and they're wiring their whole like brain systems and the neurons and their neurological pathways, how does one get rid of it? Or how does one slowly start getting rid of it, being prepared to taking the first steps? What are the first three steps, or what would you advise to someone?
Yeah, this is so good. And this is one of the things we really focus on with our resources. We have like a weekly newsletter and a podcast and stuff, because I think this is where a lot of people in the world are today. They kind of know porn's a problem. They know it's having an effect on their own well-being and their relationships, and they don't really know where to start. And that was my situation too, Kevin. Like when I was really struggling, this is even before podcasts and that kind of thing, like getting your hands on resources was really challenging. So this is a really important question. The first thing I want your audience to hear is that you can get free of pornography. Like, it doesn't matter if this has been a problem for 4 decades. I just finished working with a guy, literally was struggling for 4 decades, was watching daily when he came to me. And and he's gone, I think, I forget how many months it is. It's 3 or 4 months now. He's had a dramatic turnaround, and you know, the rest is history for him if he keeps up what he's doing. But the point is, it can be reversed. And I see that in my own practice. And there is research that shows as well, the clinical manifestations of, you know, a porn addiction can be remedied. For somebody who wants to start, number one, you have to start becoming aware of what's going on when you are having these slips and making the decision to watch pornography. A lot of people will justify it by saying like, oh yeah, you know, I was just bored, or I just had the thought randomly pop in my head. There's nothing random about the viewing experience. It might be random the way it started, but if it's continuing, it is no longer random. It is a choice that you are making on a regular basis. And the clearer you can understand why you are making the choice, the better chance you have of addressing the underlying issue. And this is the real principle here, Kevin. It's that all of our behavior, all of the decisions we make are driven by our internal reality. Everything, the choices that we make, the things that we have, the things we don't have in life, all of them are indicative of our inner reality. And a lot of people try to solve porn or other behavioral issues with behavioral solutions. They try to install an internet filter or get accountability partners. A lot of accountability partners are like, hey man, I messed up again today. You know, in a spiritual context, it's like, pray for me, that kind of thing. What we find is what really drives the needle forward, and certainly what got me free and what gets my clients free, is when you can address the underlying issues, the root causes, the things that are underneath the surface, the thought patterns, the belief systems, the emotions, the motives, everything else. When you start to pay attention to what's going on there and you kind of resolve things at a root level, the behaviors take care of themselves. So that's really the essence of it. It is getting started. Now we have three pillars. So the first pillar is self-awareness, like I mentioned. The second is healing. And that is specifically recovering from parts of your past that are contributing to your porn consumption. Sometimes it's with parents, sometimes it's former relationships. It depends on who you know, who you are and what you've been through. And the third thing is identity. It's building a sense of self that is bulletproof, that's able to stand the test of time, regardless of how difficult your circumstances may be and whatever else. And when those three exist in the context of community, then the sky is the limit for any man or woman. And that last part is really important. You cannot get free alone. I know very few people who were able to actually get fully free on their own. Most of them, it required at least seeing a professional. And in many cases, it required being part of a community. Like the research is showing, there's been a couple of viral TED Talks around this subject. But the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. It is having that meaningful relationship with other people, just in life in general, and certainly having it with people who are in that same place of life. That goes a really long way as well.
Boah, I absolutely love what you just said. Self-awareness, healing, and identity.
That's it.
It sounds like, so like I'm talking from my perspective, outside perspective, it feels like you sort of have to have a vision of a person without that one thing that is pulling you down. And yes, that's like, once you have that vision, you like, especially when you talk about identity, I've had a chat with Anthony Trucks. He has a book called The Identity Shift, where he's just talking about shifting his identity. And it really relates to like, I just had to connect these two things, like your topic with his, because it's really like anchors who you want to be. And that person will be the one without the pornography addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. You said two things that I really like. So the vision part is really important, because a lot of people who are struggling feel hopeless, and where there's no hope, there's no vision. And that's where a lot of people just end up stuck in life or spiraling downwards because they don't have any sight of what their life could be like. But it's actually one of the first things we do with all of our guys in our programs. We have them craft a why statement. Why do you want to get free? And a vision board, like some visuals here of what's actually motivating you, because everything starts with a vision. Yeah, man, that's what it's all about. The belief thing is really important, and that's the whole essence of identity. But I liked what you were saying there. One of the things that we kind of say in our community is that you cannot outperform your beliefs. So if you believe that you are a pervert because you watch porn and you're just so messed up, you will continue to watch porn by faith. Because what else would a pervert do? Like it comes with the identity statement that you've chosen to believe about yourself.
Interesting.
So you have to start learning how to view yourself. You know, again, I come from a faith context. So for us, if you view yourself the way God sees you, you ensure that the way you see yourself is the truth now, and then your behavior will start to follow suit, not the other way around. And I think that's an important distinction. That's why identity is so critical for long-term recovery.
I love that. If you think that you are pervert, obviously you will do the things that a pervert would, like what your definition of a pervert would do. That's yes, just mind-boggling. How much did your faith, and like, because you talked about it, and I just want to touch about it, that you found Jesus. So how much did your faith, how do you say that? How much did your faith like influence you to getting rid of the porn addiction and like help you actually getting out of the porn addiction? I feel like it has a lot to do with your program right now, Deep Clean. So talk me through that a little bit. I'm curious.
Yeah, for sure. So I think to go back to what we were talking about earlier, right? Like porn is fast food intimacy. So I think when people are really engaged in compulsive porn viewing, what they're really looking for is intimacy with, you know, a romantic partner, or sometimes it's just connection with another person. But it is that seeking of something that is meaningful and bonding between them and another individual. Mm-hmm. So what really helped me along the way, was not just to experience meaningful connections with my friends. And I did start opening up to my friends about my problems, and it really helped me, experience a measure of freedom. But pursuing a meaningful relationship with God made all the difference in the world for me. You know, God is infinite. So for me, when I have my own needs as a person, no human on planet Earth can fully satisfy the needs of my heart. Everybody has their shortcomings. Everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses. So even my wife, I could never put that kind of expectation on her because she's another flawed human being. But God is perfect and he is infinite. So he became the source for me of meaningful connection. It wasn't just that I went to church Sunday mornings and prayed before I went to bed. It's that I learned to cultivate this dynamic, fluid relationship with the living God, and experiencing that kind of meaningful connection with the divine, with Jesus. That is what really, I would say, launched me to a greater level of satiation in my life, of just overall satisfaction. And of course, the more content and the more satisfied you feel in your heart, the less likely you are to seek out things like pornography, because there's no need for them really once you have your needs met.
I love that. I absolutely love that. It's really interesting how you explain it. I'm not a person of faith, but I do believe that, well, depending on what faith you're talking about, but let's just say I love the fact that one needs to have faith in their lives. The faith component is so important, and even if you don't have faith in like anything spiritual, you don't even have faith in yourself, but you also need to have faith in yourself. That will also kind of like combine with having faith with like the universe or whatever it is. I think like having faith in something, whatever that is always so important, because it kind of takes off like the weight off your shoulders. And obviously when it comes to religion, like you have something to very specific to have faith of. So I really love that story. Or like, I love your story, not that story. So
yeah. And I was just going to add to it. I think what faith does, you know, whether it's Christianity or another faith, if it's done properly, it gives you meaning and purpose in life. And, you know, that is such a critical piece. I think everybody in general is looking for that. But it's amplified. It's all the more when you're struggling with an addiction. You're trying to find some purpose and some meaning. And spirituality really did that for me. And one of the things that I sort of prayed when I was struggling, Kevin, I really prayed that God would help me get free and figure this out so that I could help as many other people as possible get free as well. Because I knew I wasn't the only one. You know, sometimes that's one of the lies you believe when you're struggling. But I just never fell into it because I knew that there were other people out there who needed my help. But I had to get free myself first. And I think it just goes to show you that, you know, you never know what will happen when you just pursue your dreams a little bit. And when you have some purpose or some deep-seated kind of meaning attached to your goals, it's almost guaranteed to position you to help other people. So it still feels like a dream come true for me to do this now. I've been free for about 5.5 years, and I've had Deep Clean running for about 3. And it's really remarkable just how those things can kind of play out later on in life.
Man, full disclosure, you gave me goosebumps right now, because I love hearing stories of people that pursue, I call it their passion, but pursue something that serves someone else. Mm. And that just strikes. And every single time I have stories, and I've had a few on this podcast already, like yours, I got goosebumps every single time. So I appreciate you sharing this. And I like, kudos to you for the 5 years, honestly, and also to starting your whole program and actually like serving other people, because that's where I believe our purpose is, serving other people. And that's the meaning of this whole podcast as well. I hope that there is at least one person that listens to this, and if they need help, they know exactly who to connect with in order to get that help.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And you know, that is the problem with porn, and it's why I'm so passionate about it. It's that, you know, dreams are on hold, callings are going unfulfilled, and goals are being unmet just because guys are struggling with porn. And if there was a bigger obstacle, I would go after that one. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like you, man. I want to see people fulfill their potential. I want to see them go after their dreams. And as far as I can tell, porn is probably the biggest obstacle that a lot of people in my circles are experiencing. So that's why we just decided to go after that, because we know that if we can get that out of the way, people are going to be positioned to achieve their goals and achieve their dreams and make a difference in this world. And that's what this is all about.
Man, I love that. I absolutely love that. I have one question that we need to go a little bit just backwards. And it's in regards for people that do overcome their addiction. How do they adapt to the new life? How do they adapt to creating their own reality of what it is to love someone, what it is to have an intimate relationship in the bedroom that isn't in sync with what they have seen over years and years to come, especially people that are now creating that reality or creating that vision as they are young adults, like, so that they can do it straight away the right way and not have the expectations of what they see on the PC or phones or whatever, so that it's 10, 20 years down the line, they don't have to do it, but they can do it straight away when they are, well, young.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's lots of answers to that question, but the area that is by far the most impacted by somebody's decision to watch porn is their relationships. So that's where the biggest adjustment takes place. It is building or rebuilding trust in a relationship where it's been broken. So, you know, a lot of significant others don't like that their husband or wife are watching pornography because they feel like they're not good enough. They feel a sense of betrayal. There's all kinds of issues that come with that. And so the person who is watching porn, they can get rid of it very quickly. Or if they do a program or something like that, you know, they can make a difference in a decent amount of time. But trust takes a long time to rebuild. And long after, you know, that person has gotten free, it can still take more time for the spouse to be really confident that their spouse is trustworthy and that they're not going to fall back into that again. So if somebody, this is like, it's much easier to understand when you're married or you're in a committed relationship, a little bit harder to kind of grasp when you're single. But let me just speak to the singles really quick. Marriage is a magnifier. It will make any pre-existing problem bigger. And a lot of people who struggle, they think, you know, yeah, I have porn right now, but once I get into a relationship, we're sexually active, we get married, we start having sex or whatever it is, depending on your moral compass, I suppose. A lot of people think, well, then I won't watch porn because I'll be getting the real thing. But it actually never happens that way. Logically, that makes perfect sense. In reality, what we find is that porn continues to play into the mix, or it goes to the back burner. And then when the person experiences stress, disconnection in the marriage, the first thing they turn to is porn to medicate. So porn will only, it'll only exacerbate the pre-existing issues. And one of the best things you can do if you're single is get free of porn now. Don't bring it into your relationship because it's only going to create more problems. And if you're in a relationship, I'll give one piece of advice to the people who are in that camp as well. It is better to confess a temptation than to confess a mistake. And a lot of people in the relationships wait until after the math to just say, oh, hey, you know, I messed up or I had a slip or whatever. But the more proactive you are in your dialogue, hey, I'm having a hard day today. I don't know why my mind keeps going there. I just want to let you know. That's a scary thing to share with someone. And we're often afraid of offending our spouse with our thoughts. But 9 times out of 10, they are going to be so grateful you trusted them with that information and that you told them then before it led to something worse. So that would be my top tip for somebody who is in a relationship and, you know, looking to get free or looking to stay free.
I think we need to kind of normalize the fact that you can actually be intimate, especially for men. And that's one of the things that I really do want to do with this podcast is just be open. Everyone, every man who's listening right now, just be open, okay? Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Cynthia, thanks so much for having this chat. I really appreciate it. Before we end this, I think you've already answered the question, but I always have the question, two questions, which is, what is your best advice that you've ever been given? And what is the worst advice that you have been given? And I would like to finalize the interview with, what is the advice that you would give to anyone listening to this right now?
Yeah, okay. So the best advice I've probably been given is actually, I'm gonna answer all your questions in kind of different angles, if that's okay, because I still got the same answer for all. The best advice that I got was, I learned that there are 4 magnifiers in life: time, money, authority, and marriage. And these are things that often people think are solutions when in reality, they simply expose what's in your life. So they make more of you. Time, money, authority, and marriage. So that was the best advice I ever got, because I think when I was young, I was waiting to have all those things so that my life would be better. Like if I just had more money, if I was just in charge, once I get married, just a little bit more time, you know, we always kind of tell ourselves these things. So that was really helpful. I think the worst advice I got, which is going to almost sound like a contradiction, is that time heals all wounds. And I mentioned that, you know, the second pillar of our system is healing. And we find a lot of people who experience trauma, they experience heartbreak, they experience whatever, and they just swept it under the rug, thinking that with time, eventually they would start to feel better about it. And usually that happens to a degree. But generally speaking, your past, even if you had a really good upbringing like I did, your past still needs to be reconciled. And I think a lot of people wait too long to do that, thinking that time will heal all wounds. Now, time with the right professionals, the right practices and principles and tools, that will heal all wounds for sure. But time on its own is not enough. The best advice that I want to leave your audience with is simply this. A mistake made once is a mistake. A mistake made twice is a choice. And it's very important that we do not try to blame external circumstances or other people for the problems in our life. You cannot be part of the solution until you acknowledge you're part of the problem. So it's not an easy thing to do, but it's also unbelievably empowering, because when you realize that compulsive porn watching or, you know, whatever other kind of bad habit or pattern in your life there is, when you realize that you're the one making that choice, then it also means you can do something about it to eliminate that choice out of your life. So that's what I'll leave your audience with. A mistake made once is a mistake. A mistake made twice is a choice.
Take responsibility.
Yeah.
Man, I appreciate you having you on. Before we just end this conversation, tell the audience, how can they find you? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, well, Kev, you got a really good thing going here, man. I looked up your podcast a little bit. We vet pretty intensively before we say yes to an interview, just because we get lots of requests. I love what you're doing here. And I want to just say thanks so much for having me. This has been really cool. I think appreciate the best it. Thing I can offer your audience, if your audience is maybe if there's somebody who's just struggling a little bit with porn, they're not really ready for a program. Maybe they're not even ready to talk to anybody, but they just want a little bit more information. They can go to ultimaterecoveryguide.com, and that's going to get them a free ebook with some of my best practices and some classic mistakes to avoid if they want to get pornography out of their life. And if somebody is struggling here and they're really looking to get more help, something a bit more systematized, and they want to get the help now, they can go to my website. They can book a call with me. My calendar is there. You can schedule a time that suits you. And basically, we can have a chat and figure out what the next step forward might be.
Cool, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. I will link your website in the link in the description. And yeah, man, I really appreciate the chat. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me.